Welcome back to Unleash the Goats, where we unleash ourselves upon the Star Wars franchise with reckless abandon, and nobody quite knows what we'll say next, least of all us. I'm Nat, she, her. Angela, say hi.
Hi, I'm Angela / Faye, she, her.
Sugar, say hi.
I am Sugar, she, her.
Happy May the 4th.
That's right. Well, we haven't decided if we're posting this on May the 4th or May the 1st yet.
But it's still the month debate. Of May the 4th. Happy the Star month Wars month.
The month of May the 4th. Yes.
It's true. Happy Star Wars Day, everybody.
And apparently Revenge of the 5th, which I've never heard before, and that's fucking hilarious.
You've never heard that one before? It's so funny.
It's so funny. In honor of Star Wars Day, we're talking about the worst people. Just come out right the gate. The first thing is like, how do you feel about the ship? And I'm like, bad. We're talking about Amidala. So yeah, my opinion is bad. How do you guys feel?
I kind of like them. I think they are compelling. They're not like a couple that like is like an OTP for me, but I do read fic about them and I do like enjoy like fan art of them and that kind of thing. Like I don't know how to, like, I'm a fan of them, but they're not like, I don't like ship them, if that makes sense.
So I guess you land a little bit more neutral probably than we do. Like you're overall positive.
I'm like center positive. Yeah.
Sugar, how do you feel?
Well, I feel like I've made my feelings on Anakin fairly clear. In case you're new here, Amidala would also be a no TP for me. I'm not a huge fan of them. I do find some of the intended themes compelling. I don't find the relationship compelling. I'm not entirely certain we're meant to. Or if we are, that it's written in such a way that, you know, it is compelling. But I like some of the thematic aspects of Amidala, but the relationship and the chemistry itself, I think, is just not my cup of tea, personally. But I don't like any Anakin ships. I don't think anyone deserves to be stuck with them. So, you know, there's that.
I think I'm on the same page where it's like the same way that I think that Anakin is an interesting character, but I despise him as like a person. I think that Amidala has the potential to be interesting, but I personally think that they like missed in a couple areas. I can like see where they're going with it and it's interesting, but I don't think it was like done well enough for me to get on board.
Yeah, that's more where I land. I feel like the version of Amidala that's in my head is great.
Right.
I mean, I also think that like Amidala, and we'll get to this in more detail later anyway, but I think Amidala is in some ways intended to be like, they don't work, right? Like, they're not supposed to work. Yeah. You know, I'm not supposed to be rooting for them necessarily, but like the place that they hold within the narrative is obviously very important and very central. And so there is supposed to be something compelling in their story, even if part of the story is they are dysfunctional and toxic to each other.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people sometimes miss that. And so they end up this weirdly glorified, romanticized, like, Romeo and Juliet, forbidden lovers, star-crossed thing. And I'm just like, really not who they are. Like, they really shouldn't be together. And I think there just really isn't enough discussion and like, breakdown of why they don't work, even in, like, the happy fix-it AU sort of concept where Anakin doesn't commit genocide. You know, that, like,
where Anakin becomes a fundamentally different character.
Yeah, you know, it's like, I mean, if Anakin is a fundamentally different character, or if he has, like, a radically different backstory, then fine, whatever, like, you know, go hog wild. But in the context of canon, like, which is, for me, it really is just the films that Lucas wrote, I'm kind of leaving Clone Wars out a little bit at this point, because Clone Wars gets a little sticky. But, I think they don't work, and I think that's, in large part, that's supposed to be the point, is that they don't work. And I think that that's not discussed enough. Particularly by people who do like them, you know, that, like, even in the best of circumstances, like, they would have failed. And I think that that's part of what makes them a little compelling to me, is that concept that, like, they don't work. Like, it doesn't really matter what they feel about each other. They don't work. And that's part of what makes them compelling. And we are jumping ahead here, but we can keep talking about this, or we can move on to what we think does work about them.
What really works for me is the music, for the most part. I love their love theme. It's so pretty. Like, it's just a very compelling piece of music. It makes me feel things. It's one of the first pieces I learned how to do on the piano when I played piano back in the day. And it's just a gorgeous theme. Like, honestly, like, one of the main things that drew me to them as a couple was, like, their love theme. It's really, really good. I don't know if they deserve it, honestly. But it's really well done. So, yeah.
Don Williams deserves it, though.
Yeah, that's true. Exactly. Yeah. That works for me. And I really like the actors both being very pretty. It always helps. And then...
So kudos to the casting director.
Yeah. Kudos to the casting director. Yeah. I really, really, really enjoy their, like, reckless jump off a cliff together dynamic. I think that's very fun when they don't lean into it very often in the movies, which is kind of lame, because like I think that's one of like the best things about them as a couple is that like they are both very reckless and willing to jump into things together and for each other. I think that's kind of sweet, but you know, they don't do that much, so
it's also the reason they don't work though, right? Is like they're both willing to jump into fires and burn a world down for each other, and that's exactly what dooms them, because guess what, they burn the world down, you know. Like, shit happens when you burn the world down.
Sure, but like I could also see them like going cliff diving together and having a great time, and like that's a very cute like dynamic to have as a couple if it doesn't go too far into the extreme, which is exactly what happens to them, is they go way too far into the extremes.
But I think that's what compels them to each other, is that both of them are extreme.
Yeah,
like I don't like they would never be satisfied by just going cliff diving. Like, they have to burn the world down or it's not real, it doesn't work for them, you know. Like, for them it is, you know, go big or go home. You know, and I think that's kind of the point, is that, like, neither of them is going to be satisfied by cliff diving with each other.
I think they should have tried it, at least.
We don't know if they tried it or not.
Let's assume they didn't, but I also think even if they had, they still would have burned the world down. Anakin, at least, would have burned the world down. Do you want to keep going, Faye, just since you're...
Those were all of my positive thoughts.
Those were all of your reasons, okay.
I mean, I could probably find some more, but we are, you know... moving along.
Okay, well, I can talk a little bit about why the things that I like about them. So one of the things that I think has kind of changed my perspective a little bit on Anakin and Padme is Lucas's assertion that he sees his films almost like silent films, and so a lot of the story gets told more visually than through things like dialogue. And so one of the things that I'm kind of going to be looking at a little bit more in this episode is the difference between the story that we get through the visuals versus the story we get through the dialogue, because I think in a lot of ways that has sort of changed a lot of the way people view Anakin and Padme, that there are some people who, you know, really just pick up on the longing looks and the pretty music and... you know, just get the basic love story and take it from there. And there are other people who really listen to that dialogue and are like, wow, this is not great. Mm. You know, this is like stilted, it's clunky, it's awkward. It veers into offensive territory sometimes, and we'll get to that later. But I think that it's interesting to look at Anakin and Padme visually and try to pick up like what story you actually do get from Anakin and Padme when you erase the dialogue. You can leave in the music, but like erase the dialogue and you pick up, basically you just get a very simplistic forbidden love story, right? Like, they're staring at each other all the time. They can't do anything. They seem like they're struggling a lot. There's a lot of longing, a lot of yearning, and, you know, like they have a couple of cute moments, you know, out in the field where they're dressed in beautiful clothing and the sun is shining. It seems happy and positive. You know, and then they get married at the end. It's very kind of basic forbidden love story, sort of territory. And, you know, so in a lot of ways, the visuals do kind of work. And I think that the actors are getting that across. I think the actors are very much kind of giving that, like losing the word I'm trying to look for here, but like very like strained, like everything is painful and difficult because they just like are feeling so much for each other that they just cannot physically handle it. I think that does get across in their visual performances. So I think that does work. And then I will discuss what I was kind of mentioning earlier here, the thematic elements of Anakin and Padme, and that subversion of the trope where it's like, I would burn the world down for you, is this very romantic thing most of the time. But like with Anakin and Padme, the whole point is that it's awful. You're burning the world down. There is actually nothing positive about burning the world down, regardless of the motivation. You're burning the world. like, end of story, it's bad, you know? And I think that I actually find that a very compelling narrative, you know, that, like, it doesn't matter how much they love each other or how much they think they love each other, even. Because, honestly, I don't genuinely think that they love each other. I think it's very, like, they love the idea of each other more than they actually genuinely love each other. Because they spend all of, like, a week together before they decide to get married. And I don't genuinely think that that's enough time to have any sort of real feelings for anybody. But, like, it doesn't matter how much they care about each other. It doesn't matter that they want to be together. You don't burn the world down for someone and have that be a good thing. Like, their feelings are irrelevant by that point. And I just think that that's, like, a really interesting subversion of that trope. And then the other trope that they subvert is the forbidden lovers one, where usually when you have forbidden lovers, you are on the side of the lovers. Like, there's a, you know, there's a reason Romeo and Juliet are so memorable, and a lot of people try to apply Romeo and Juliet to Anakin and Padme. But in Romeo and Juliet, there's a reason, there's no reason for them to really be forbidden from each other. Like, the family feud is stupid and nobody even remembers why it's there. But with Anakin and Padme, there are really good reasons that they should not be together, especially as they are, and they go for it anyway. They choose to just be selfish and go for it anyway, and so, like, you really aren't supposed to be on the side of the forbidden lovers, because there's a reason they're forbidden, and they're being selfish by choosing to be together rather than, like, fighting for love. It's just like, no, you're just being assholes, you know? And so I think you're getting, like, a really interesting subversion of tropes here, where these two people seem to feel something very deep for each other, and you do get that from the performances, but the writing is telling you, like, this isn't ever going to go well. It doesn't matter how positive or pure it seems, it's just going to end in disaster, and they are both choosing to let it end in disaster because what they feel for each other is more important than the fact that they both know it's going to end badly.
One, like, main thing I have about, like, couples in fiction is that I think that in general most people could make a relationship with anybody work if they put in the work. And the thing about Anakin and Padme is that they could work if they were willing to sacrifice for each other rather than just trying to give each other stuff. And I think that they have a lot of chemistry. I think they have enough things in common that, like, they could pretty easily make a relationship work if they were willing to put in the work and the sacrifices it takes to build a relationship. But they're not. They want to have their cake and eat it too. They want to live their lives with everything that they have going on and also be in love.
Well, I have plenty to say about that, but we have our 1 minute warning here. But, like, I think the thing for me with Anakin and Padme is that the thing that compels them to each other is that they're never going to make those sacrifices. Neither of them's ever going to make that sacrifice, and they both fucking know it. I think also the thing that compels them to each other in some ways is the secrecy and the forbiddenness of it all. You know, that, like, it wouldn't be as compelling, especially to Padme, I think, in so many ways, if it were easy. You know, like, if they were willing to make that sacrifice to be with each other, I don't think they'd go for it.
Yeah, my point is that they could. Like, they could make it work if they wanted to do it the right way, but they choose not to because it's fun.
But that's what I'm saying, though. Like, I don't know that it would work if they were doing it the right way, because I think the things that compel them to each other are the things that don't work, that it sort of thrills them that it's forbidden. It sort of thrills them that they shouldn't be doing this. And I think that that thrill goes away if Anakin just leaves the Jedi and so it's fine, or if Padme leaves the Senate and it's fine. Like, I think that there would be less of a compelling thrill to the relationship, which is part of what compels them to each other. Like, I think the things that, like, really connect them are, like, the worst parts of themselves and not the best. And that's likely where you and I are going to disagree about Anakin and Padme and this relationship, but I personally think that the things that compel them to each other are the worst parts of them, and they bring out the worst in each other, but that is why they like it in a lot of ways. I think they pretend it isn't, but I think that's deep down kind of what creates it.
I feel like the things, like, just to wrap up our pros, I think that the visuals and the music both work really well. We will get into the dialogue. I feel very strongly and negatively about the dialogue. I think that one of the things that is fascinating is it kind of, like, tied to Anakin as a character, where you go into the prequels knowing how his story is going to end. And so you set up this romance that does kind of have this pull of, like, oh, but what if they made different choices? And whether or not you think that, like, whether or not you think they are capable of it, you know that that's not going to happen. And so there's this sense of, like, kind of doom to the relationship where you're like, I know this isn't going to work out. And so it's going to, like, it's really possible to feel like a shit show from the very beginning because you know it ends badly. Like, obviously you don't, going into the prequels for the first time, like, you don't know all of the details of how it ends badly. But, like, you know it doesn't work out.
I mean, especially if you're going into it coming from the originals, though, because from the originals, the story is that Padme lives after the twins are born. The originals imply that she doesn't die until Leia is old enough to remember her. So when you're watching the prequels coming from the originals, you don't know how it's going to work out at all. You don't know that she's going to die eventually, obviously. But, like, how the relationship deteriorates is very up in the air. It's one of, like, the biggest questions that the prequels answers, which I think is really fun.
Yeah, I mean, you know that Anakin becomes a villain and Padme is represented as this very moral person. And so that contrast, regardless of how they changed Padme's ultimate outcome, is, like, it's already there as, like, this cannot go well, you know? And you know that, like, the Republic that she sits in gets destroyed in part by Anakin. Like, that is already also kind of established, and so it's like, we know that it cannot end well for Padme. But, yes, like, there is a level of uncertainty about, like, how exactly it turns out, as well as a level of certainty, and, like, it can't be good, though.
Yeah.
Like, which is there in a lot of, you know, forbidden lover stories. Romeo and Juliet tells you straight up that they die, you know, at the very, like, within the first couple of lines of the entire play. They're like, yeah, so they're gonna die.
Yep.
Here's how it happened, you know? And so you go through the entire play going, like, God, like, you know, how does this work? You know, like, why is it so bad for them? But yeah, so I think there's some really interesting concepts put forth with Anakin and Padme. I'm not sure they're all executed super well. But I think the concept behind them where, like, you know, like, this is the kind of relationship normally people would root for, but, like, you really aren't supposed to be with them here because they're both making selfish choices in order to do it. I think that's very interesting. I like the concept of it. And I do think that, like, the visual performances are good in terms of, like, the silent movie concept where, like, you definitely get that these two are, like, longing to be together and you know, all of that. I think that that works.
But then if we talk about the dialogue, because the dialogue, what sucks about the dialogue is that a lot of it is genuinely really good out of context. Like, some of those quotes are like, whoo, that's so cute, but then in context it's like sucks. Like the line where she's like, I truly deeply love you, and before I die I just want you to know, that's a great line, that's really sweet. But then, like, you don't have anything backing that up. There's nothing in the rest of the movie that, like, backs up the fact that she's truly deeply in love with him and just, like, has been hiding it this whole time. Like, or, like, the scene by the fire when he's like, I dream about the kiss you never should have given me. Like, it's a great line, except she didn't kiss him. That's not what happened. And, like, it's just there's nothing backing up these really, really good lines. There's just, like, there's no substance.
Yeah, so this is where we get into chemistry, because I do think the dialogue impacts their chemistry deeply. And I know Nat agrees, at the very least. Faye clearly seems to agree to some degree, but that, like, the dialogue is awkward. It's not ideal. In a lot of places. I think there's a lot of it, I think, is actually more down to the editing than the writing for me. Which is kind of what you were getting to, Faye, that there's not a lot of build-up to this, you know, and there's a lot of really short cut scenes mm-hmm. with Anakin and Padme, as opposed to sort of longer scenes letting them bond together. It's just like, oh yeah, look, he's like frolicking in a field and they laugh. Great. That he floats a pear to her and she laughs. Great. You know, and it's like, there's not a lot of real emotional depth to any of this. And I just think that, like, in order to get me to believe in that I truly deeply love you, I needed something a little deeper mm-hmm. than he falls off an animal and pranks her into thinking he's seriously injured, right? Like, that does not do anything.
That's their best scene.
Yeah, I'm sure Nat has feelings about that too.
The thing that really pushes me is that, like, Faye's right, there are some really good standalone lines, and I think that the awkwardness kind of comes from probably a lot from the editing, but also probably just there are so many more a little bit awkward lines than there are really profound mm-hmm. ones, and strung together that it's, like, inconsistent to me. Like, some of their scenes, like, their scene in the field is cute. It's a beautiful visually. She has on this incredible dress, and I'm like, you could be saying anything, and I would still like this dress. But he's getting really possessive over her talking about, like, a first crush or a first kiss when she has explicitly said multiple times that she's not interested.
And also and that he asked about, based on the context.
Literally, he's like, tell me about this thing, and then gets all pissy about it. And I'm like, this is very in character for you, but also, like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, and she tries not to. She tries to, like, you know, brush it off, and he pushes her to talk about it and then gets mad when she does.
Yeah. It's just, it's not my favorite. I think that there is a lot of potential. I do think that they, like, I think that Natalie and Hayden do a great job of, like, trying. Like, doing their best with the dialogue, but there's only so much you can do. And also for me personally, like, you have to work really, really hard to come back from specifically, like, a woman saying no and not being listened to, and, like, someone still trying to pretty aggressively romantically pursue her. And so when she says, I'm actually in love with you, that comes out of fucking nowhere for me. And I just, they kind of never recovered from that. Like, that one little detail, I'm like, I actually am not going to get over this, and I'm going to hold a grudge about it.
Like, a lot of it plays into these, like, old movie tropes of, like, when a woman is saying no, she actually means yes. Like, she's only saying no to be, like, polite, but actually she wants him to pursue her. Like, it's playing into a lot of those tropes, none of which aged well. It doesn't work. Like, we were moving past this already when this movie came out, but unfortunately George Lucas, as talented as he is, has not kept up with times very well. And what he likes, he likes, and he sticks with that, which sometimes works out for him. And in this case, it did not. It aged very badly and continues to age badly, unfortunately.
I think there was a way for them to do that successfully. And maybe because of how clunky the dialogue, or maybe the editing. Like, we don't have to get into the, like, no means yes thing. I do have a lot of thoughts on that trope. We don't have to get into it. But I think this is where they, like, fell the hardest.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that, like, you know, you guys have both kind of mentioned that, like, this felt like it never went anywhere, right? Like, it feels like there's no build up to I truly, deeply love you. But I think that that's because we're coming at this from the perspective of three people who mostly identify as women, and who have been raised as women. And so there's a very different perspective we are bringing to this romance than George Lucas had on this romance. And yes. So I think from Lucas's perspective, he did have, when a woman says no, she means yes. And so Padme, from the very first time in the packing scene where, you know, she says, you looking at me like that makes me feel uncomfortable. I think we were supposed to understand, not like, wow, back off, you creeper, but like, I'm actually super attracted to you, and that makes me uncomfortable.
Yes. I mean, we do have to keep in mind that not too long before he started making these movies, he got divorced and no longer had his wife around to correct him when he did these things, because you could argue that Han and Leia have a similar dynamic where when she says no, she means yes, because she kind of pushes back against him, like, flirting with her, but she doesn't really mean it. Like, she's kind of flirting back, and, like, they do it more successfully because Leia never straight up says, don't pursue me. She just, like, is a jerk to him, that he likes that. Whereas with Padme and Anakin, she says no, and Anakin still pursues her anyways, which is a much more aggressive version, and a much worse one.
Right, and Han is, like, inarguably one of the good guys, too, whereas Anakin is someone who is becoming a villain.
Yeah.
And particularly within this film, is starting to devolve into a villain, and so that's part of the context of him and of this relationship, whereas Han and Leia are always kind of like a positive relationship. And by the time he starts more seriously pursuing her, they are also friends and have been friends
for
and
years.
Working together for several years now. And so you can kind of understand their dynamic from that perspective, whereas Anakin and Padme have like, you know, a week's worth of time together, you know, maybe back 10 years ago. And then he's coming in being very, very, like, assertive, maybe. He's not quite aggressive, but he's very assertive about his pursuit of her, you know, and that he does ignore her no's and her discomfort more than once. And it's like, even if you assume Padme is uncomfortable because she's attracted to him and knows that she's not supposed to act on it, he should still be respecting that. And he isn't. But I think that if you try to pretend that we're looking at this from the perspective of a, what, 50-year-old dude, that, like, you know, Anakin can feel that she's super into him and, you know, that, like, the rules just shouldn't apply to them. And so he's pushing because he knows that this is what she really wants. And, you know, that he's just, he feels so much that he can't hold it back. It's not really his fault, but, like, you know, he is being selfish in it. And that is something that is being critiqued. But that his feelings for Padme are just so overwhelming, and that, you know, ultimately he knows that Padme feels the same way, but that she just is a little bit more moral than he is, and so she needs, you know, a little bit more of a push. And so by the time you get to I Truly Deeply Love You, I think from Lucas's perspective, that was built up. Because you set up with the packing scene that she is already deeply uncomfortable by the attraction. But we're viewing this from such a different perspective that when we hear her say, I'm uncomfortable, it's like, wow, I am so not into this. This is creepy. This is uncomfortable. Back off. And so yeah, there isn't
enough. I feel unsafe.
Right. And so there isn't enough from that starting point to get her to I Truly Deeply Love You 2 hours later. But I think if you start from the perspective of she's already super into him and she just can't admit it, then there's less distance to travel to I Truly Deeply Love You. And, like, we're viewing this and analyzing it from a very different perspective than I think Lucas was. And so for us, it feels like, wow, there is not at all enough here to build up to that moment. But, like, you could argue there is. It's just executed so badly that there's a lot of people who would look at it and go, like, well, shit, like, he's just a sexist, creepy asshole. What is she seeing in him? Why is this not a massive red flag from day one? You know? And it ruins the rest of it.
I mean, one thing that has always really annoyed me about the whole thing is that, like, I don't know why Anakin is so invested in pursuing her. Like, I love Anakin. He's great. I feel like I understand his character a lot of the time. Like, sorry, he's great as a character, Sugar. Sorry.
Sugar, like, visibly flinches.
But when he shows up, he meets Padme, and he's immediately like, I want to pursue a relationship with this woman. He has no reason to want to pursue her over the many other girls I'm sure he's met over the years. Like, besides the fact that he's, like, built her up a lot in his head, I guess, from, like, when he's a kid. But, like, that's a 10-year-old crush. He's done other things in his life. Like, why is this the thing that's sticking, I guess, like this? And why does he so insistent on pursuing her? What is it about Padme that, like, has him so invested? Besides the fact that she's pretty and hot. Like, he's met other hot girls. Like, I don't know why he is so interested in pursuing her in particular, aside from, like, a childhood crush, which shouldn't have lingered this long, you know? Like, it doesn't, I am not compelled to believe that he should be this invested in this girl. Like, I get it. Natalie Portman's beautiful. I understand. However, the amount of investment that he puts into this is excessive for what I feel like his character should have. Like, if he just, like, had showed up, I don't know. There's a lot of things I could fix about this. We'll get into that later, I guess.
That part actually works for
me.
We'll
get into that.
I think that, like, I actually do get that, because I think Anakin is someone who is very, I mean, that's part of his character, right, is that he's greedy. He clings to things a lot, and back when he was just leaving his mother and he was feeling a lot of the pain of that separation, even if it was by choice, Padme is the one who kind of steps in and ends up feeling a little bit like a mother figure to him in that moment. She's the one who comes in and gives him the blanket. He gives her the little Jaipur snippet. And so I think Padme sort of ends up a little bit in his mind kind of conflated with those feelings for Shmi. And he is in a moment in Attack of the Clones, too, where he is getting dreams about his mother dying. And then he is suddenly thrown back into this, you know, situation with Padme, where Padme's life is also in danger. And so I could see these things kind of coalescing together, where, like, he desperately wants this connection with Padme because he feels like he can't go seek it with his mother, but that he is now in a position where he is officially supposed to spend a lot of time caring about Padme.
That makes sense, except, like, where it loses me is the jump to being very connected with Padme and, like, her being a childhood friend to being romantically interested in her enough that he wants to, like, break his vows. That's where it loses me, because I understand, like, wanting to reform a deep connection with somebody that, like, you have conflated your relationship with your mother with, like, over the years. Like, that makes total sense. But he jumps so fast into, I must date this girl. Especially for somebody who has sworn to never date. Like, that's where the leap kind of loses me.
And I think that phone for me, I explain away as he's never that committed to the Jedi way of life. Like, it's not that hard for him to not commit to that, you know, and to that he's always kind of not felt like he fit in, which is exactly why the Jedi didn't fucking want him. But setting that part aside for the second, like, I don't think he's ever fully committed. I think he always kind of longs for what he had with Shmi, and he wants, and I think also, like you mentioned, like, this is a 10-year crush. Like, he clearly is having a baby puppy love crush on her when he's 9, you know, that he sees her and he's like, oh my god, first crush ever, right? Like, and she's nice and she gets conflated with the feelings for his mother and is there in the pain of his separation from Shmi. And so I think there's a lot kind of happening that gets wrapped up in Padme, and I don't think he's ever that committed to the Jedi way of life, especially because we do have a scene with Palpatine, I think, in Attack of the Clones, where we hear Palpatine mention something along the lines of, like, you're better than them, your feelings are what make you special. So we already get the sense that he's already being told that, like, he doesn't have to conform to what the Jedi have told him he should be doing, or to their way of life, or their restrictions, that Anakin really should just be allowed to do whatever the fuck he wants, because he's special. And so when he gets to Padme, he's got all these feelings left about his longing for Shmi. They got wrapped up around Padme. It's been 10 years that this has just been simmering. And then he's tossed back in with her right as he's also having these dreams about his mother dying. Like, I think all of that just gets in, like, one big ball that sort of explodes a little when he sees her. Mm. And so, like, yes, it's very extreme. It's very, it feels very sudden, obviously, because we didn't spend those 10 years with Anakin. But, like, I could kind of see that Anakin is the kind of person who obsesses. Like, this is exactly who he is. He doesn't let go of things. And so he's just been holding on to these feelings for 10 years, and, like, it's just, like, a repressed bottle, right? Like, the pressure's building up, he sees her, you know, and that's it. So, like, it works for me, because I think Anakin is the kind of character who absolutely would do something like this, who would hold on to a crush for 10 years, and then, you know, sees that woman again, and is like, I'm gonna shoot my fucking shot, and I'm not gonna let go until she says yes. Like, that works for me. Yes, Nat.
It was a good Anakin impression. I'll touch on the Tuskens. Here's the thing, is that, again, as we've mentioned, their relationship is, like, forming as Anakin then goes and commits a genocide, basically, right? And so Padme, as a person who has been set up as a very moral character, then listens to Anakin come back in and say, here is how, like, my rage got the better of me and I murdered all of these people, except because of racism, they're not considered people, right? And Padme is then just like, this changes nothing about my feelings for you. And to me, that kind of fucks with her characterization of supposedly, like, always being a moral character and, like, making the kind and correct choices. I realize that this is based on probably Lucas, like, it's not intended to be a genocide, right? Like, the Tuskens are not intended to be looked at as people. Anakin very explicitly calls them animals. Part of the reason this isn't working is because we are obviously looking at it, again, from a very different perspective than Lucas is, and it has aged poorly. But I feel like we should have caught that on the editing floor. And those are my feelings about the Tuskens.
The Tuskens get wrapped up in some very obvious racist tropes. Faye mentioned that the stuff with Padme and the sexism is based on older tropes from movies and older romances and other films that Lucas already liked. The same problem is happening here. But instead of, you know, awkward romances from the 50s, you know, it is like Westerns and the way Native Americans are depicted and Arabic people are depicted. Like, this is very Lawrence of Arabia kind of bullshit, and, you know, all of those kind of films from that period of time. Like, there is a lot of that happening with the Tuskens in particular, And so while, like, they are people, they are a savage people. And you're not supposed to be sympathizing with them over Anakin. That what happens to Anakin's mother is supposed to be more sympathetic and horrific than what Anakin does to the Tuskens. Like, what Anakin does to the Tuskens is not usually considered a genocide, but a massacre, because there are obviously plenty of other Tuskens still.
Yes.
But he does genocide tribe, but he doesn't genocide the entire race. But it is a massacre.
The way that it's framed feels like the equivalent of, like, he went out and killed, like, a family of wolves. Like, that's the way it's framed in the movie. Like, something horrific and awful. Like, he killed a bunch of puppies. Like, it's sad, but, like, you know, people do that. That's not what happened. Yeah. He killed a bunch of people.
And there is some, like, you know, looking back on it from our perspective now, in the sense that, like, the Tuskens are getting represented better and better and more as people in current media. But, like, he does show, like, a little Tusken kid, you know, playing with a pet or playing with a ball or something. And so there is kind of just the slightest element of, like, they are a people. This is a village. This is a child that he has just killed. But the way Padme reacts to it does feel very underwhelming. And it is one of the biggest black marks, I think, within this relationship and the reasons it doesn't work. Because, like, you're right. Like, it does feel very out of character for Padme in a lot of ways. Just given what we have learned about her, and, you know, people have come up with 10 million different reasons for why she reacts the way she does. Like, the only one I know from the creatives behind the film is Natalie Portman kind of talking about, like, how she felt like Padme is someone who just wants to fix everything. And so she sees Anakin get this dark and this violent and this in pain, and she reacts to that by going, like, I can fix you with my love, you know, like, I can love you so much that I bring you back from this. And she decides to believe in that so much because she loves him so much that she just has to fix it. And that's what kind of compels her into this relationship, that she already has so much love for him that, like, it's more important to try to fix him than it is to try and, you know, bring him to justice or get justice for the Tuskens. But, I've got a lot of feelings about how Padme reacts to the Tuskens, and that can be a whole other episode.
Next month's our special is this one scene.
genuinely, you could discuss it for 2 hours. It would be...
Yeah.
There's a lot kind of wrapped up in how the Tuskens get treated in Attack of the Clones, and in the prequels and the original trilogy in general, and how it relates to Padme in particular, and her relationship with Anakin, and the overall characterization of her character, and the way that people sort of misconstrue... differently interpret Padme's character based on how you interpret that one scene. You know, like, if you just go, like, oh, well, of course Anakin's in the right and the Tuskens are in the wrong, and so Padme comforting Anakin is the right thing to do, you know, like, then their relationship probably comes off a lot more positively. Whereas if you're like, holy shit, this man just committed a massacre against innocent people, and Padme never should be brushing this off and letting this go, and, like, why the fuck would you fall in love with, let alone marry and have children with, you know, someone who's already a child murderer, then the relationship looks a little less positive and rosy.
Unless you want to pull into the part where Padme is kind of a bad person. Like, Padme was a queen, and it is, like, kind of a well-accepted thing in fiction, especially, that good people cannot be rulers and still be good people. And I feel like that gets brushed over a lot with Padme, because she was queen for 4 years. She had to make some shitty decisions about that kind of thing during a war recovery and, like, wrap up and all those things. And then there's the part where Shmi took her in, sheltered her, and helped her, and she never went back for her. I mean, there is something in, like, a novelization that, like, she sends a handmaiden to go find her and she can't find her. But she tries once in 10 years to find this woman who saved her life, essentially. And that's it. And there's no mention of it in the actual films, even though her and Shmi had multiple conversations and spent a lot of time together. There's nothing. And, like, when you take into consideration that, like, straight up in the films, Padme's kind of selfish and thoughtless when it comes to people who she considers to be lesser than, that lines up with her not taking the Tusken massacre that seriously.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, this is kind of moving into, like, how people misunderstand them, which is a good thing because we are very over on our time here, but Like, I think, I don't know that I agree that she sees people as lesser than her. At least she certainly doesn't believe she does. But I do think that Padme is also very selfish in a lot of ways, selfish and greedy, and that she is in a very similar position. That she and Anakin are not as dissimilar as people think they are. You know, that Padme is entering into this relationship as well, and it is selfish and greedy for her too. And, you know, that is very much an aspect of her character that I think gets very overlooked. And, like, especially within Attack of the Clones, you know, there's that scene where Obi-Wan and Captain Typho are seeing off Anakin and Padme to go, you know, go into hiding. And Obi-Wan's like, well, I hope he really doesn't do anything reckless, you know, while he's trying to protect Padme. And Captain Typho goes like, I'd be a little more worried about her doing something reckless, you know. And that
great
is like
scene.
Right, and that's the consistent theme with Padme throughout this film in a lot of ways, is that, like, yes, Anakin is the one who gets more violent, but arguably Padme is more reckless. And that she is oftentimes more willing to sort of throw caution to the wind to do what she believes is right. And she usually does it in the name of, like, the greater good or a cause or something. But, you know, she, like, doesn't want to go into hiding because, well, there's a vote coming up, you know, and I have to be here. And it's like, okay, but, like, how does your death then impact the vote? You know, if you get killed, like, there's impacts of your death as well, and she's being reckless there. You know, it happens when she decides to just go with Anakin to Tatooine, you know, instead of insisting that he remain with her so that she don't die. And then, you know, obviously she's the one who insists that they go off to save Obi-Wan on Geonosis later, even though they've gotten, Anakin at least, has gotten explicit orders to remain behind. And so it's like you just constantly see this kind of recklessness to Padme that she's able to justify with, like, well, I'm doing it for someone else. I'm doing it for a greater good. I'm doing it to save people. Whereas Anakin often is more selfish. And I think he does often do similar things where he kind of tries to convince himself it was for a greater purpose. But he just is a little bit more obvious in his selfishness and his greed sometimes than Padme is. And I think people see that and go like, oh, well, Padme's just a very selfless person. She wants to save Obi-Wan. She wants to help him go save his mother. And it's like, yeah, but, like, what are the consequences of those choices? And how does that maybe make her choice seem a little less selfless in relation to that?
I would be more understanding of it if there had been a single scene earlier in the movie where she's like, how's your mom? Have you heard from her? Is she okay? Anything beforehand from the woman who saved her life. I mean, like, hey, have you checked up on your mom? Is she okay? I looked for her. I couldn't find her. Do you know anything? Anything prior to them running off to Tatooine would have really helped me, personally.
Yeah, I mean, I think that doesn't bother me in the sense that, like, you know, we don't really see anyone else running off to check on her either. I mean, Anakin's response would be like, well, I haven't checked on her either, so, you know, I don't know.
Like, oh, yeah, but, like, that could have opened up the conversation of, like, his dreams way earlier, which could have, like, foreshadowed it a little bit. Like, I feel like they could have done something.
True. I mean, there was a scene where they were supposed to talk about his nightmare when they're on the refugee ship, and he has a nightmare while they're on the ship, and they were supposed to, and it kind of leads into that conversation that does make it into the film about attachments.
I like that better than, I mean, I do like the scene on the train, actually. I think it's one of their sweeter scenes, but I do like that better than the actual scene we got.
Yeah, so they were supposed to kind of touch on it because he does have the nightmare about his mother. I think she asked, I'd have to watch the deleted scene again. It's been a minute since I've actually seen it, but there is, I think, a discussion before he has to run off to Tatooine where they kind of hit on that. Obviously, she isn't like, hey, I looked for your mom and couldn't find her, which would be a little ridiculous given that, like, 20 minutes later in the film, they go to Tatooine and within 2 seconds, Anakin finds Watto and he's like, where's my mom? And he's like, oh, well, I sold it to this Lars guy.
Okay, well, in fairness, the reason that he gets that information is because he's Anakin, not because he asked. Watto wasn't just telling anybody. Watto was like, oh, shit, this guy I used to own could kill me right now if I rub him the wrong way. I have to tell him anything to get him away from me. Whereas, like, Padme's hand people, like, he has no motivation to tell them anything.
I don't think they find Watto at all in the book. So for reference, it is an E.K. Johnston book. It's one of the Queen's something series, Queen's Shadow or Queen's Peril or something like that.
I don't like her very much.
Yeah. I never actually read the book where this particular line is from, but I think the implication given is that she sends Sabe in particular to Tatooine to try and find Shmi. It is like 4 years later because this is set like just post her term as queen. So it does take Padme about 4 years to send anybody back. to Tatooine, and by the time she gets back to Tatooine, Watto has since gone broke and has moved. And so they can't find Watto anymore. And I don't know that there's any real explanation as to why Sabé is never able to find Watto, but she also doesn't get a lot of time to do it because Padme then goes on to be a senator and she pulls Sabé back out and never is able to, you know, manage to send someone back, presumably. But it would be a little funny if she was like, yeah, you know, we couldn't find anything. Like, I tried, but, like, we couldn't even find Watto. And then Anakin is just, like, drops onto Tatooine and is like, hey, look, he's right here, you know, like it just, it's a really weird thing for E.K. Johnston to have put in that, like, oh yeah, Padme totally tried, but, like, they couldn't find him, he was gone. It's like, but in Attack of the Clones, it takes Anakin 2 seconds to find Watto, even though Watto clearly is not in his shop anymore. Like, he's out, I think, in a stall somewhere, or booth, and it's like, Anakin finds him just fine. Like, it would take probably not that much effort to find Watto. He probably did have to ask around, you know, to figure out where Watto had gone if he wasn't in the shop anymore. It's not like Anakin just has, like, Watto radar.
I feel like that attempt at a, like, oh, she couldn't find them is trying to make Padme a less flawed character than she is.
Yes.
It's an attempt.
Like, it's working really hard to try to be like, no, she is perfect. And it's like, no, she's not.
Yeah, welcome to E.K. Johnston. But,
yeah.
But, like,
throwing shade.
It also is kind of a lot like the Beauty and the Beast 2017, where they're like, oh, we have to explain all these teeny tiny plot holes that people noticed about the original animated film, and somehow those fixes just make it worse and more confusing.
Yeah.
Like, it's within that realm,
mm-hmm.
you know, of, like, you know, did we need an explanation for why Padme hasn't searched for her? I mean, regardless of whether she does or not, you could be like, she's busy. Like, she's busy ruling an entire planet and then being a senator for an entire system. Like, the girl is fucking busy. And, you know, like, it's not her mother. She met Shmi for all of, like, 2 days. And, like, yes, Shmi does something very helpful and very important for Padme. But, like, I don't know that Padme is obligated any more than the Jedi are to go back and do something for Shmi or to try and find her. Like, you know, just, I don't know. Like, I think you could just argue, like, Padme's busy, you know, that she knew this woman for 2 days and she's got a lot of other people who are relying on her. And also Padme is, you know, a major politician in the Republic, and the Tatooine is ruled by the Hutts. And I'm sure that there are a lot of problems there with, like, Padme choosing to step in and do something on that planet without it going awry.
I am of the opinion that she should have done something because this is a woman who helped her and she left in slavery. And I think that is a awful thing to do morally, whether or not she had an obligation to help this woman or not. I think that that is a debt that she left unpaid. And if I had ever done something like that, I would feel horrible about it forever. And I feel like that is, like, a flaw of Padme's that is never explored in the movie. And if there was a flaw that they intentionally gave her, that would be one thing, because I think that's a very interesting flaw for her to have. I think it makes her character more, like, complicated. But because it's just kind of brushed over and not addressed at all, not even in the fandom, it really bothers me, because this is something that they just, like, set up as, like, a fine thing that happened. Whereas this is a woman who helped her and sacrificed her son, almost let her son get killed in order to help this girl, and she just left her and never checked up on her, according to the movie canon. And I think that is just a shitty thing to do, whether or not she had a moral obligation or contractual obligation or not. Like, there's just a shitty thing for her to do, and I wish it was addressed, and I wish it was, like, part of her character rather than being something I have to infer based on what they're telling me in the movie.
I think that the fandom also, I think that most people tend to not necessarily overlook, but kind of sideline Shmi.
Yes.
In a way that you specifically really hate, because you love Shmi.
I love
Shmi
a lot. I think she's a really cool character.
And I think you're right for that. Yes.
She's just nice.
Not to join the fandom in sidelining her, but we should move on. I'm so sorry. I love you, Shmi. You're right. Sugar touched on not thinking, like, for you, Sugar, your feelings are that their relationship exists because of their worst qualities. And regardless of whether or not Anakin falls, the relationship will fail. Is that a fair summary of that?
It is.
Angela, how do you feel?
I think that if they had wanted to make it work enough, they could have. But because they cared more about being important than they cared about their partner. And so that's why I think their relationship fails. So I think that there is a world in which these two characters could choose to build something beautiful together. But they would have to go through a lot of growth to get to that point that I don't really see them getting in the Star Wars universe because of all the crap that's happening around them. So in the story that they are in, I don't think it's possible. But if they were picked up and plopped into, I don't know, a high school rom-com, I think they could probably make it work if that was like their only goal.
Yeah, but that's totally different characters at that point.
Like, I mean, if you take these two characters and you drop them into a world where there's therapy, I think they could probably make it work. But
to be fair, there ain't a world where there's therapy. Like, Anakin's choosing not to take advantage of it.
I don't know.
If you force them to go to therapy.
I think that if their only goal was to live a normal life and to be in love, I think they could make it work. But because they have their main goals are to change the galaxy, make a difference, be important, that kind of thing, they don't prioritize each other. And that's the reason, that's like a big part of why the relationship fails.
But that's who they are too. So it's like, at that point, can they make anything work if who they are is like dysfunctional to each other and to this relationship? Like, this is a core aspect of both of them, is that neither of them is willing to make that sacrifice. Neither of them is willing to prioritize one thing or the other. They're trying to have their cake and eat it too. That's what they both want. And this is like a very like important aspect to both of them. And that's why they fail. Like, there's no point where either of them is going to make that sacrifice, because that just isn't who they are. And so, like, I don't think that there is any point in this, with these two characters in this context, where they would ever make that choice. And so that just tells me, like, no, it doesn't work. It's, they're never going to make anything good out of it, because they can't. Neither of them is the kind of person who could make something good out of what they have.
Yeah, but I think people can change if they had wanted to, and they didn't want to, and that's why it fails. But if they had wanted to, they could have. That's kind of
the fact that they don't want to is who they are.
And like I said, I think people can change in, I mean, I'm thinking of them in terms of like, if they were real people as characters, no. Mm. But if they were actual people who had these like characteristics, I think that they could change and be an actual couple if they'd wanted to. But as characters, the way that they are written, no, they would never actually work, because they would never make that choice, like you said.
I guess. I think even like if we pretended they were real people, like, they might be able to change, but like, would they ever actually change towards each other? Like, I think both of them are pretending that they know each other. They think that they understand who the other person is, but they don't. They idealize each other. They are looking at this relationship through like rose-colored lenses. They, you know, they want this fantasy version of their relationship and not something that's real, you know? And so like, if at some point both of them went through therapy, let's pretend, and they both gave up their careers in order to try to be together, I think there's still a lot of like really dysfunctional things, and that they would end up at a place where like they don't necessarily actually want the same things out of life. And like, this would pull them apart if they were healthy enough to recognize that actually they aren't good for each other. They pull out the worst of each other. They encourage the worst in each other. And like, this is just a relationship that is not necessarily ever going to be good for either one of them. And like, I think that's my interpretation, is where we differ, is that like, I don't think they're ever going to be good for each other. And if they were in a healthier place mentally, that they would have to recognize that they're not good for each other and just not enter into it. They would break it up. They would leave and not move it further. I don't think that there is like any version of this, especially within the context of Star Wars, you know, like not putting them into a high school AU, because at that point, like, they are just totally different characters now, and that's kind of speculation. You can make them whatever you want them to be, but like, within the context of Star Wars, like, if we pretend, like, you know, Palpatine dies, right, like, before Order 66 happens, like, where do they go from there? Like, Anakin is still a dysfunctional, selfish, greedy asshole, you know, Padme is still kind of a dysfunctional, selfish, greedy asshole. Like, even if Anakin gets to the point where he's like, I will leave the Jedi to be with you, he still demands obedience out of Padme that she is not necessarily going to give him. He still seems less invested in the concept of a family than Padme always does. Like, he never responds to her being like, I want to raise the family on Naboo. We're going to be so happy. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be great. Like, he never responds to this. Like, he never seems to want the concept of a family in the same way she does. They just don't seem to have the same goals or priorities at any point in this relationship. All they share is a fantasy. And once that disappears, what's left is not something either of them wants.
But in the same vein, like, because they're both, like, kind of in a similar place in their unhealthy states, I feel like, were they to choose to grow and, like, try to become better people and, like, recognize their own flaws in a fantasy scenario where that actually happened, like, I feel like that is a case in which they could grow into that together. They could work on themselves and each other together, because who understands the situation that they are in where they are awful people better than each other, who have been there this whole time? Like, if the glasses were to lift and they suddenly recognized what was going on and they chose to be better people, not that they would, but, like, in that scenario, I think that they could work, because they're both, like, starting from the same place. I feel like they could end up in the same place if they wanted to.
Yeah, I think this is just different interpretations of the character. Like, I don't know that, like, they would ever actually be good for each other, even if they got to a mentally healthy place individually. Like, I think that this would be sort of like they are each other's drug, right? Like, if you wean yourself off, like, it's like an alcoholic, right? Like, the alcoholic cannot actually go back to drinking alcohol after he's become sober.
Sure, but they're people, not intoxications.
But the relationship, I think, is, like, an intoxication for them. I think that the relationship is kind of like a drug for them in a lot of ways, because, like, it enables them to be their worst selves. And I feel like if they came back to each other, it would make them fall into bad habits all over again. Mm. That I don't think they would work. I think it would kind of, like, push them back into being their worst selves. And again, I don't think that they actually want the same things deep down. And that is already a major blockage for this relationship. I think Padme wants a family. She wants to live on Naboo and, you know, raise a family there the way that her family raised her. This is, like, his dream that she has. I don't think Anakin shares that, personally. That's never anything he ever discusses as, like, what he wants to do and be.
Famously, he's so good at discussing those things.
But as a kid, though, like, you know, like, what he wants is to be a hero. He wants to free the slaves. And so I think Anakin being tied down to a relationship with Padme on Naboo, where they just raise their family together, would, like, make him shrivel up and die. You know, I think Anakin needs a purpose, and it can't be a father.
In fairness, those are goals he expresses as a child and then never expresses again. They don't seem to be part of what he wants to do anymore as an adult. Besides, like, being, like, a Jedi general or whatever, he doesn't really talk about what he wants anymore when he's an adult. So I don't know if we can really apply what baby him wants compared to, because baby Padme wants to be queen and wants to save her people, and adult Padme just wants to go home and start a family. So I don't know that, like, baby Anakin's expressed desire to be a hero can necessarily apply to, like, what he wants, because when he finds out about the babies, he expresses that he is happy about it. Like, whether or not he's lying is, like, up for interpretation, but, like,
begrudgingly, but yeah.
I mean, that, like I said, it's up for interpretation, but, like, he does seem to be happy about it. And, like, there is, like, a beginning of a scene where they're, like, they're talking about names, and, like, he is excited that there is a baby coming. So, like,
oh, they don't talk about names, do they?
Yeah, there's, like, okay, it is, it's covered by music, but it is, it does happen in this, you can, like, see it, they're, like, talking about it, and, like, as it fades in, that's what they're discussing, and it's in the script, that is what they're talking about in the scene, but, like, the sound cuts in as they finish their discussion about names, and they move on to some different topic. So technically it does happen, but not...
It's there if you look
really hard.
I don't know. It's like I've gone through his dialogue and his scenes, and
I will find it for you. It is in the apartment.
He really never seems that invested in it. They're always in the apartment. They never leave it until he decides to choke her out on Mustafar. But, like, you know, like, there's that scene where she is the really saccharine sweet one that ends with, like, so love has blinded you. Like, she's the one sitting there going, like, I want to raise our baby on Naboo. I want to go back there. And his response is, wow, you're so pretty. Like, just nothing. He's not responding about the baby. And then, you know, like, when he talks about his dream where Padme dies, like, he's just going, like, oh my god, you're dead. Oh my god, I don't know what to do about this. And it's Padme who has to be like, hey, what about the baby? Like, does the baby make it? And he's like, oh, shit, yeah, the baby, right, I don't know. like, it's an afterthought for Anakin, But yeah, like, he really just never seems that invested in it in the same way that Padme does. And so, I don't know. My personal interpretation of them is that Anakin just does not share her goals. And so even if both of them became way more healthy and, like, left the Jedi, left the Senate, that, like, they just wouldn't necessarily be that good for each other. And, like, that the healthiest thing the two of them could choose to do together is choose to leave each other behind. Choose to let go of this thing that never really worked and, you know, try to find happiness with other people.
I feel like Angela has said multiple times, really good idea to fix them. Change their characterization.
I think it's not so much change it, but, like, explore it a little bit more deeply. Instead of, like, the kind of fluffy scenes that we got where he's, like, you know, pretending to be very injured or floating a pair, like, you know, I think that there could have been more discussion of, like, who these characters are and where Padme's flaws are, where that selfishness is coming from. I think you could really work on Padme being a somewhat more corrupt person to kind of flow into the idea that Padme is willing to give up those morals to do something she knows is a bad idea in the end. And I think that would be kind of my main change, honestly.
Yeah, it feels like a lot of Padme, because Anakin is such, like, main character, it feels like a lot of her characterization just kind of, like, falls behind, which leans into this, like, old tropey, like, she's the love interest and not a main character, so we don't have to care as much about her. I feel like if she actually, like, was given more time to develop and not in the context of refusing Anakin's advances, if she perhaps came out and said, actually, I am interested in you in any way before she just jumped to, I'm in love with you, that would have worked better for me.
Okay, are you ready? I have it. I have play-by-play. Okay, so first thing,
I'm ready.
We don't change anything about the apartment scenes, like, in the beginning of the movie, because that's fine. Like, he's interested in her, she's uncomfortable, we got there. And then we don't change anything about the train scene, because that's cute. They're, like, a little bit of flirty-flirty, you know, whatever. Like, they're genuinely connecting. They're being friends. But then when we get to the lake, that's where we make the change. Because we get to the lake, he's talking, he's chilling, he's being nice, he's talking about his childhood. And she, okay, also we include the family scenes, actually, before I forget that. We include the family scenes where he's being nice to her nibblings. Her parents like him. We keep all that. And then, Natalie, you look confused.
I don't know about these scenes.
Oh, okay. So there's deleted scenes.
Context.
Shock.
There's some deleted scenes.
We cut important
context. Where they go meet her parents. They stay a couple days with her parents before they go to the lake. Mm. And, like, he sees her childhood bedroom. They have dinner. Her mom teases her about bringing a boy home. Like, that kind of thing. It's very cute. It's very sweet.
That. Okay.
Anyways, and then when we get to the lake scene, this is my biggest change. Instead of him kissing her and him touching her shoulder and being a weirdo, he's just talking and, like, regularly, and then she leans over and kisses him and, like, then runs away. That's okay. How I would change that. So, like, it is clear that, like, she is interested in him and doesn't like that she's interested in him. Like, she really likes him but doesn't want to like him. And though you change that, and then you keep everything else pretty much the same. Like, maybe take out some of the weird stuff with the lake scene, and I guess you can change the pair scene if you really want to, Natalie. But I feel like that, like, one change of, like, her being genuinely interested in him and, like, clearly freaked out about it makes everything else work so much better.
Yeah.
I would say the packing scene needs to change, too.
I would change the dialogue there, yeah. Instead of her saying she was uncomfortable, she'd just be like, stop, or something.
I think you could have her be overt there, like, which would lean into my idea that she's a little bit more corrupt, that she just goes, like, you know, like, I feel you, like, I'd be totally do this if we weren't in this position. And then, you know, she breaks a little bit of the lake.
Yeah, if she'd been like, listen,
yeah,
you're cute, but you're a Jedi, like, stop it.
Yeah, literally just, listen, you're cute, but you're a Jedi, fixes their relationship.
Like, just have her be actually genuinely more interested from the beginning, because I think she's intended to be interested from the beginning, even if she's still pulling back. But I feel like if that was a little bit more obvious and not, like, I have to put on my straight man goggles to see it, like, then I think that could help a little bit towards, you know, and just this idea of, like, man, like, I'd be totally down, but, like, my people would kill me. We genuinely should not be doing this, but, like, fuck yeah, I'd be down. You know, just kind of lean her a little bit more like she's into it.
Like the scene where he stands up and he says, but I am grown up. If she'd been like, and a Jedi, and then walked away, that would have worked for me. That would have worked really well because like she's interested, but she's setting a boundary because of who they are, not because she's not interested.
Yeah, I think that's where you need to lean it a little bit more to kind of make the rest of it work. Because he comes off so creepy and so aggressive that, like, it's very confusing why Padme's into him at all.
I do admit that the but I am grown up line, where, and then he stands up and he's very tall. That would work on me. That would really work on me, I will admit.
You're like, oh, a tall man? Oh. I feel like to give Padme, like, we give Padme more of this, like, take away all of her explicit no's. Give her, like, some more overt dialogue, because the dialogue is what's broken in my mind. Of just, like, yeah, I am interested. To kind of reframe that he's not, like, to make it explicit that he is pursuing someone who is interested. But also, like, let's have Anakin back off a little mm-hmm. bit. Because there is nothing more attractive than people respecting your boundary.
Yes, after she says no, like, he should not pursue her again.
Yeah, and he's just like, okay, cool, we're just gonna be friends. I'm still very obviously attracted to you. There's some pining going on here. But, like, not being creepy. The pair scene doesn't have to change. It's just that in context of everything, I hate it.
I'd also say that, like, we have to get her to truly deeply love you, right? Like, what we've gotten yes. for two now is, like, fuck yeah, I'd break some rules to fuck you. But, like...
if we get her there, then we can make the leather dress work. Because we all know how much we love the leather dress on this podcast.
No, boo. No, we're not making it work. We're taking it
in
out.
In which case, we've discussed this before, sugar. I want to change that dress so badly. I want to make it a beautiful red velvet dress. I would die for it to be, ooh, like, a yes. gorgeous, romantic, sexy red velvet dress. I hate the stupid dominatrix leather thing. It's dumb. It doesn't fit her at all. It doesn't fit the tone of any of her other costumes. But, like, a beautiful, sexy, like, red velvet dress? Oh, my gosh. She would look so good.
I can't get on board. You have a very young actress that is now 18 and is being put into, like, really aggressively sexy clothes. Like... no, it's very unlikely I'm going to be okay with that. Like, we should get rid of that.
Yeah. I think also I would want longer scenes where we understand what connects them, you know? And, like, I think I'd want, like, you need a balance, right? Like as much as I, like, think that the scene where she discusses her past crush and he gets, like, annoyed at it, even though he's the one who pushed her to talk about it, is dysfunctional, like, there is a point to it being dysfunctional. Right, and it's just, like, when we talked about it being bad, it was, like, in the context of a lot of this is awkward and it doesn't work. But, like, if you get more of the other things to work, then that scene where he, you know, starts off with this, he starts off by pushing her to talk about a crush and then gets mad at her for saying she had a crush. And it ends with him being, like, fascism is the answer. And Padme has to be, like, ha-ha, what a nice joke. Let's move on because this is awkward now. Like, there is a lot to that I think is really interesting. And this is actually where I think Padme's flaw really comes in, right? Like, it's not just that she's selfish, but that Padme is willing to, like put a film over her mind and pretend it didn't happen. Anakin didn't just advocate for fascism. That's not what he did. It was a joke.
I think... It was a funny joke.
Because, like, if she pretends it's a joke, she never has to deal with it. They can just move on, and she can just be attracted to this dude with no consequences, no qualms. There's no conscience that has to come in here. She doesn't have to report him for being a Jedi super into fascism. You know, like, it was just a joke. He was just fucking with her. And I think that's something Padme does a lot of, and I wish that there was a little bit more insistence on, like, Padme... recognizes that there are problems in the galaxy, and sometimes she's able to be like, yes, the problem exists, but, like, I can't focus on that because I have to focus on fixing it, right? Like, I have to focus on the solution and not the problem. But, like, what's interesting with Anakin is that her solution to he's super into fascism is, if I just fuck him hard enough, he will, in fact, just not be a fascist anymore.
He'll just not be a fascist.
Killing children if I fuck him hard enough.
In fairness, she fucks him hard enough, she gets a kid, and the kid does stop him from being a fascist.
I'm not sure that was Padme's plan.
I'm just saying.
That does not appear. But I'm like, saying that's clearly it not works, her plan because she seems pretty shocked later. She seems pretty shocked when he does the killing stuff all over again later. So that clearly is not actually the plan.
But did her plan work? Kind of.
Not really.
Like, I think that's so much of their relationship.
Like, she fucks him so like... hard he becomes a bigger fascist, though. Like, let's be honest.
You gotta fail before you can thrive.
Like, does he thrive? He does immediately after.
What do you mean, does he thrive? Like, yeah, kind of.
Italy.
Yeah, but then he gets to be a fun ghost and, like, say cryptic stuff to Ahsoka. Like, he's having a great time, clearly.
Is he?
Okay, that's fair.
Moving on from the Ahsoka show, we've done that. Nat, please.
No, we're not doing the Ahsoka show again. I feel like so much of their relationship would be, like, if I could just buy into the fact that Padme was actually interested in him from the beginning, like, it would explain a lot more. Like, the scene about her crush doesn't work because I don't buy that she likes him. And so the fact that she just kind of, like, closes her eyes and lets him say shit, like, doesn't make sense to me. If you have done a better job of setting her up as someone who is interested and is trying to pretend that she's not, that context makes the scene a lot better.
Anyways, we would have time for all this if they had just cut the 10-minute long droid factory scene that we didn't need. Why do we have a 10-minute long droid factory scene?
Listen, hot take from Natalie. No. I fucking love that scene.
No.
Natalie, no!
It's because I did not watch the movies as much as I played the Lego video games. And that factory level fucking slaps. It's so good.
They made
good.
It just for you.
They made it just for me. That scene is just for me. And I love it. The tension.
We could have 1 minute in the movie and then 10 minutes in your level for your game.
Yes. Okay, great. Yeah.
Okay, we solved it.
That's fine. We solved
it. I mean, it feels a lot like a video game sequence. It does. Yes. That's part of the problem with it, is that it feels like it works better in a video game than it does in a movie.
And it does, and it's great, and I highly recommend it.
But yeah, like, I think, like, I, even if you get her attracted, though, I need to believe she loves him enough to break all of her morals for
yes.
him.
Yes. Yeah. Otherwise, I just believe she has no morals.
Right, and so I'm like, we either have to go the direction of she's a little bit more corrupt than we think she is and say, like, no, actually, she probably would be willing to break her morals, and that's really not that big of a shock. Or you go the other direction, you have to, like, really push that she's super into this dude and there is something that is really compelling about him within the span of about 4 days that gets her to break all of her morals for him. And, like, one of those has to be true, mm-hmm. and I don't think either one is in canon, but that's where I would need the changes for Padme. Like, one of, it doesn't have to be both, but, like, one of them needs to be true in order for Padme to work for me.
So, long story short, Padme should be written like she's a person, and then Anna Dalla might work.
Maybe.
They should make different choices. And then we would have different outcomes. Crazy!
Would you guys like a goat fact to close this out, if we have anything else to say?
I'm ready for a goat fact.
Okay. Despite popular belief, both male and female goats can have beards. Both male and female goats also sometimes have wattles, bits of skin that dangle from their head or neck. No one is sure why they have them, but one thing for sure, wattles is fun to say.
Did you do this because it sounds like wattles?
Yes.
That's very good.
See, the direction I went, though, is that Padme uses Anakin as a beard.
We're going to explore that in our next episode.
In our next episode, which is, in fact, actually our queer episode.
We'll talk about Padme and Sabe. Ooh.
Oh.
Like, oh, yep, sorry. Naboo's actually just kind of homophobic, and so Padme marries Anakin because she just needs a beard. You know what? This explains a lot.
Okay, hang on. Can it be a beard if you're a secret relationship?
Yes, because they are really bad at it.
Ah, okay.
True. Right? She is just, like, they all know she's in a secret relationship, but it's actually chiller to be the Jedi than the woman.
There we go. We fixed it. We solved it.
We did it. I love that.
Good job, everybody.
Our intro and outro music is Mos Eisley Cantina by Speedkicks. Angela and I edit. Our artwork is by me, and Sugar is our writer and researcher. You can find us on Instagram and Tumblr at Unleash the Goats. Thanks for listening.